I want
this morning, in some way, both to help myself and help others. I don't know, we sort of lose sight of the fact that one of the most significant and important parts of the Yom Kippur davening comes there in the second half of Musaf. Now, by the first half of Musaf, well, you don't have to tell anybody else. I mean, I can admit it to you, I'm yawning already, and like, I'm getting all tired. And I even put my head down, and everybody gets worried, is the rabbi okay? I love that attention, I love it. I'm kidding. But then comes the avoda, what we call the avoda of Yom Kippur. And sometimes I'm concerned that it said too quickly, certainly the second half of the avoda. The avoda is, and I don't want to, you know, all the words that we're going to use are magnificent. There's something so, on the one hand, very beautiful and then very sad about the avoda. So I want to deal a little bit with the avoda. And of all things, what got me back into the avoda, you know, sometimes somebody gives you, comes from Chutz Laretz, and gives you a present, you know? Now, I hope there aren't people anymore who come from Chutz Laretz and give you, you know, like a can of tuna, like they think we can't get a chicken at a sea in Bumblebee or Hellman's mayonnaise and think, you know, they schlepped it for 6,000 miles and we're supposed to be happy about it. I mean, today everything is reversed. There are a lot of things that they come here to buy over here in Eretz Yisrael that they can't get there. Okay, all right, so. But somebody came, a nephew of mine came to visit me about 2 months ago, and he brought me a videotape of a shiur by Rav Soloveitchik on the Avodas Yom HaKippur. The visual part of the video is not that great. The audio is quite good, but for me it's been a religious experience. Man, I don't know if there are too many people who sit in front of their TVs in absolute awe, fear, and trembling. And of all the fascinating things is when he starts the shiur, I didn't remember that shiur. It was the year we were on sabbatical here. When we were on sabbatical, 80-81, it was the 1980 Tshuva Shiur, one of the last that he gave, and I was here. All the years that I was in New York, I'd go here. The Chag was the great emotional and religious experience, 3,000 people sitting for 3 to 4 hours listening to the Chag expound on Tshuva. It was most magnificent. So here I get my kicks now. But somebody come in and into my bedroom and see me sitting in front of the TV, you know, like shuckling like this and listening to every word. It's amazing. Some of the things the Rav says over there are things that he said at different times. I was able to pick up. So, but he talks about the Avodas Yom HaKippurim, and for the Rav, the Avoda of Yom Kippur was something that was of great importance to his father before him and the Zaydeh in the family, Avodas Yom HaKippur. What is the Avoda of Yom HaKippur? So we're going to try and just get down to the facts of the Avoda and some of its greater significance. The Avoda of Yom HaKippur is a description of the service that took place in the Bet HaMikdash, in the temple, Bizman Shebet HaMikdash Hayah Kayam, at the time when there was a Bet HaMikdash, there was the Kohen Gadol alone, the high priest alone, was the one who did all of the service in the Bet HaMikdash, and it's all described in detail in the Avodah of Yom Kippur. It's all described. Everything, every step that he took, and everything that he did, all. The fact is that the entire avoda is really the Torah Sheba'al Peh, the oral law of the avodas Yom HaKippurim that appears in Parshat Acharei Mot, is the parsha of avodat Yom HaKippurim. We read that in the Torah, but then the entire description of the avodat Yom HaKippurim is there in the Shemona Esrei of Musaf. Now, first of all, its significance is a pasuk in Hosea. The pasuk in Hosea is the end of Hosea is the Haftorah for Shabbos Shuva, which precedes Yom Kippur, and it says there, Unishalma Parim Svatenu. Unishalma Parim Svatenu means we will pay for the Purim, the calves or the bullocks that we bring as sacrifice, Svatenu, with our lips. What does it mean? Explain in a moment. The Gemara says the following, that the God tells Avraham Avinu that in lo briti yom v'layla chukot shemayim v'aretz lo samti, the world depends on sacrifice. Avraham asks God, how do I know that I'm going to inherit the land? And God tells him to bring sacrifices before him. Amar lefonav. So Avram says to God, Rabbeinu Shel Olam, Tinach b'zman shebet hamikdash kayam. I can understand at the time there is a temple, so Jews will bring sacrifices. B'zman she'ein bet hamikdash kayam, when there is no temple. Matehei aleihem, what's going to happen to the Jewish people if they don't have the means of communicating and serving God through sacrifice? Amalo. So God says to Avram, Kvar tikanti lehem seder korbanot, I have already prepared for the Jewish people the order of sacrifice. Kol zman shekodin behen, as long as they read it, mala ani alein keilu makrivin lefonai korban, I consider it, reading it and studying it, I consider as though they have brought the sacrifice before me, umochel ani al kol avonoseim, and I forgive them for all of their sins. Unishalma padim, we pay for the sacrifices. In what way do we do it? With svatenu, with our lips. Which means that the saying, the avoda, saying it all is ki'ilu, it is as though we are in the Beis HaMikdash, and we are in fact doing it, and God accepts it as though we have brought those sacrifices. The fact is that one who goes through the avoda, you can even at some moments begin to feel it, even in the niggin. V'akohanim, v'ham ha'omdim v'azor, the kohanim and the people of theirs, they heard the name of God issue forth from the mouth of the Kohen Gadol b'kiddush avatara, or you kodim u'mishnach avim, everybody would bow down. I mean, you live through the avoda by the during the course of the Shemona Esrei. This is a Gemara in Megillah, from Hosea, the three words, Unishalma Parim Svatenu. And by the way, the idea of Unishalma Parim Svatenu is every Musaf, Shemona Esrei, has as its core the sacrifices that were brought. Musaf of Shabbos describes the sacrifices of Shabbos. Musaf of Yontif, the sacrifices that were brought on Yontif. Musaf of Yom Kippur is different. There, not only do we say the sacrifices, but we describe the entire order of the sacrifices at great length. On a number of occasions, the Rav both wrote and he spoke about something that is highly unique. The parsha in the Torah that describes the Avodah Yom Kippur, Parashat Acharei Mot, has a pasuk that the Gemara says is out of order. Not by out of order, out of sequential order. That's what I mean. The parasha of Acharei Mot is very descriptive of every step that is to be taken by the Kohen Gadol. I think it's Pasuk 23, if I'm not mistaken, that our rabbis in the Gemara tell us out of order. What it describes in Pasuk 26 as the Kohen doing, did I say 26 or 23? 23. I'm out of order too? Yeah, it could be in someplace between 23 and 26. It's just a very strange Gemara, where the Gemara says that Pasuk, it's not in its proper place. It really belongs chronologically in the order of the temple service. It belongs later. Why? Why is this so? Because our rabbis have told us, and so we receive the word from Sinai, that the Kohen Gadol immersed himself in the mikveh 5 times on Yom Kippur, and he washed his hands and feet 10 times. And if this pasuk would be in its if that would be the proper order of things, then the Kohen would only immerse himself 3 times and wash his hands and his feet 6 times. So it can't be. I know you're confused. I see it written all over your faces. But that's not important. I'm going to take you out of your misery. I will take you out. Love was always troubled. Well, why didn't the Torah write it in the proper order? If there's one pasuk that's out of sequence, and so that's really not important, well, why didn't the Torah write it in its proper sequence? Torah has to write it in wrong sequence. And then the rabbis have to tell us that, well, at Sinai we were told that this is out of order. What a strange thing. The whole thing is strange. Says the Rav, no, it's not strange. Not strange at all. And here in part, he says something that I once said in a shir. Moshe Rabbeinu comes down from the mountain and he shatters the luchot. He smashes on Shiva'os of Tammuz. He shatters the luchot. When will he ultimately bring the new luchot to the Jewish people? On Yom Kippur. Says the Rav, in the wake of something that was said by his grandfather, no, great-grandfather, Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik, the Baal Beit Halevi, the great-grandfather of the Rav, says the following. And this was part of a shir in which I discussed the question, did Moshe Rabbeinu break the luchot, or did Moshe Rabbeinu drop the luchot? It's not so simple. I once gave this shir, and I gave it recently, some while ago, I gave it recently at the Israel Center, the amazing Monday night. There were all these amazing Monday nights. All right. So on this Monday night, I talked about the luchot. Did Moshe Rabbeinu drop them, smash them, or did they become terribly heavy for him and he just couldn't hold on to them and they fell to the ground? I'm not going to say everything I said there, just that there are two approaches in the Medrash. One, that he indeed shattered it, and the other, it became too heavy for him to carry. Why did it become too heavy? Says the Beit Halevi, on the basis of a medrash, the Pirkei de Releza, because the letters, as Moshe Rabbeinu comes down from the mountain toward the camp, the letters begin flying out of the luchot. So you would have thought, of course, that if the letters fly out of the luchot, you understand, so it's easier to carry. No, the letters fly out, and it becomes more difficult for him to carry, and he drops the luchot. Said the Beit HaLevi, why? Why does it get heavier? if the load is lighter. So he says the following, he proves it for many Gemarot, he proves it. On the first set of Luchot, God had inscribed Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaalpeh. Both the written and the oral law were on the first set of Luchot. When Moshe Rabbeinu was coming down from the mountain and he sees people dancing around the golden calf, the letters fly out. Which letters fly out? The Torah Shebaalpeh, the oral law, flies out. And all that's left in the Luchot is the written law. So it becomes too heavy for him to carry. You know why it's too heavy for him to carry? Because the Torah Shebichtav, the written law, without the oral law, is incomprehensible. It's too difficult for man. We can't understand it. It's too heavy. It's impossible. So he drops it. When Moshe comes down on Yom Kippur with the second set of Luchot, do you know what's written in the second set of Luchot? The Torah Shebichtav alone. Only the written law. And here's one of the places where the Chav becomes so poetic and so beautiful. I always melt away. I mean, this one just melts me away. So he says, if Moshe Rabbeinu, and this is, remember, it's on Yom Kippur, Moshe Rabbeinu comes down and he brings the Luchot to the Jewish people that have Torah Shebichtav. So where's Torah Shebaalpeh? So he says, you know where Torah Shebaalpeh is? The oral law that's going to be transmitted from generation to generation. We become the parchment. We become the ink. We are the quill. The Torah Shebaalpeh is written on the hearts and the minds and the neshamas of Klal Yisrael. We become the bearers of the Torah Shebaalpeh. And he says, do you know what a difference that makes? The difference that it makes is that every Jew, regardless of the extent to which he is observant or not, is holy, sanctified. We're the parchment of Torah Shebaalpeh. It may skip a few generations, but it'll come back. Says the Beis Halevi, the Yontif of Yom Kippur is the Yontif of the Oral Law. Shavuos is the Yontif of Torah Shebichtav. Yom Kippur is the Yontif of Torah Shebaalpeh. So do you know what Torah wanted? God wanted that the entire service of Yom Kippur should only be comprehensible through Torah Shebaalpeh. Therefore, he writes an order of the service in Parshat Acharei Mot that's out of order. And the only way we can understand it, and the only way in which it can become comprehensible, is by our acceptance of Torah Shebaalpeh. Torah Shebaalpeh tells you this pasuk is out of order. And if you place this pasuk elsewhere, you're going to be able to understand the whole avodah of Yom Kippur. So you know what that means? Everything depends on our acceptance of the oral law. And that was done on Yom Kippur, because Yom Kippur is the yantif of Torah Shebaalpeh. So therefore, Bedavka, it's such a strange Gemara. The whole thing is strange. And therefore it means that when we read the Avoda of Yom HaKippurim, the only way it can be comprehensible, the only way this can be the real Avoda, is only if we have accepted the dictates of Torah Shebaalpeh. Yom Kippur, therefore, is the Yontif of Oral Law. Torah Shebichtav was Shavuos. Torah Shebaalpeh is Yom Kippur. Yes? Yeah, that was a Gemara Megillah, Lamed Aleph, Amid Beis. Okay. So first of all, the importance. So we've said, therefore, that the importance of the Avoda is, first of all, the idea of Unishalma Parim Svatenu. That we are using our mouths, and our mouths are going to take the place of the order of the service in the Bet HaMikdash. Second, and this is extremely important in the thought of the Rav, that Yom Kippur is the affirmation, that's what he called it, Yom Kippur is the day which represents the affirmation of Torah Shabbat Peh, the oral law. Because the only way in which the parasha and Torah can be comprehensible, and the only way in which, and we're talking about the luchot that were given on Yom Kippur. You remember the Mishnah that we quoted at the end of the last year? Lo hoyu yomim tovim liyisrael, there were no greater holidays for you by Klal Yisrael than Tu B'Av and Yom HaKippurim, and Rashi says Yom HaKippurim, the day the Torah was given to the Jewish people. In what way? Because the Luchot were finally brought down from the mountain and given to them. So, but the Luchot were Torah Shebeh K'tav that they had already heard on Shavuos. But what Moshe is really transmitting to them on Yom Kippur is Torah Shebaal Peh. And only through Torah Shebaal Peh does the service of Yom Kippur become become comprehensible. Absolutely not. Both Torah Shebichtav and the Torah Shebaal Peh that we are talking of can't come min hashamayim. When we say that it is from heaven, it's Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaal Peh. You can't add or subtract. And one, you can't confuse Torah Shebaal Peh with a broader sense of Torah Shebaal Peh. The broader sense of Torah Shebaal Peh is that all of Shas, Bavli, Yerushalmi, Mishnah, Gemara, all of that is Torah Shebaal Peh. That's not the Torah Shebaal Peh that we're talking about. There is the Torah Shebaal Peh that makes Torah comprehensible. Some of the examples that we give, and the Rambam gives these examples. It says in Torah that a male, should put on tefillin on his arm and his head. That's all it says. What are tefillin? Does it say any place in Torah what tefillin are? How do we know what tefillin are? How do we know what this is supposed to look like? How do we know what's supposed to be inside, outside? What color, what size, what shape, what form, what's supposed to be written, what's kosher, what's possible? How do we know this all? By the way, we're a very inquisitive people. Can you imagine Moshe Rabbeinu coming down from the mountain and he tells the Jewish people, I want you to put the signs on your hands and frontlets between your eyes. And Moshe, Vusidus frontlets. Vusidus. But he doesn't have to explain to them in great detail what tefillin are, of course. When he comes down from the mountain, he tells them you should put, and he describes to them in detail. I must have once said some years ago in the Shir, Rav Shamsham of Earl Hirsch writes the following. And this may clarify the concept of Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaal Peh, which, as we say, is the significant ingredients of Yom Kippur. Says a student attends lectures in the university, and he takes notes. You know how we take notes. So then somebody wasn't at the lecture, and he says, I'd like to borrow your notes. I couldn't make it to the lecture. Can I borrow your notes? So the fellow who took the notes says, you'll never understand my notes. You'll take a look at my notes and say, you won't understand, you know. I doodle in the middle and I heen, and I know what the doodle means, and you would know what the doodle means. And then there are terms that have to be defined, and the teacher defined them in class. You know, in any university class, the first thing you have to do is define your terms. If you don't define your terms, then you're spelling ignoramus. All right? So obviously, the fellow took notes. But when the professor used a certain term, he explained the term. Now, when I go back to my notes that I wrote, and I take a look at those notes, I remember everything that the professor said. Everything comes back to me. But somebody who wasn't there won't have a clue. When Moshe came down from the mountain of Shamsun and Father says, he told them, you should take a nice fruit on the first day of Sukkot. So what do you think? What nice fruit? He didn't wait for anybody to ask what nice fruit. He told them you're supposed to take a lulav and esrog and hadassim and aravos. Yeah. Fellas, you understand, and the esrog has to look like this, and the hadassim have to be this size, and the lulav has to be that size, and it has to be this color, and it has to be fresh and all. He told them all the halachas. Everything. But when he wrote it in Torah, all that you had to write was ulkachtam lechem b'yom arishon, take on the first day the fruit of a beautiful tree. Yeah. And then any Jew, when he'd come to the pasuk ulkachtam lechem b'yom arishon, knew exactly. He remembered the shiur that was given by Moshe. Of course, there was never a moment in history when anybody thought that maybe it was an apple or an orange. Even though the Gemara spends a whole page asking what is pri eitz hadar. And they list all sorts of fruits and they give all sorts of reasons why it can't be that. The purpose of it is not because there was a moment in history at which they stopped and said, by the way, what is that beautiful fruit? There was never such a moment in history. What they were doing is they wanted to see where in the words pri eitz hadar, where do we see that this word can mean esrog more than any other fruit? Or, one word in all of Torah, and there must be volumes, massive volumes written on that one word. Moshe Rabbeinu says, you want to eat meat, v'zavachta, you shall slaughter. Now, do you know how many volumes there are on the laws of Shechita? But it's not written in Torah. But when Moshe told them, v'zavachta, and you should slaughter, he explained it in detail. And then when a Jew would come back and he'd read the pasuk, v'zavachta, Moshe said this, and Moshe said that. That's the Torah Shebaal Peh that we're talking about. I'm not talking about the Torah Shebaal Peh, for example, of Muktzah. At some later point in history, our rabbis decided that in order to make a fence around the law so that Jews should not come to inadvertently desecrating the Shabbos, so they said, since you can't write with a pen, don't carry a pen. A pen becomes muktzah on Shabbos. This is completely rabbinic in nature. This is the rabbis exercising the authority that was given to them, that they can legislate what they feel is in the best interests of Klal Yisrael. If they saw that there was problems from an agricultural society, we became a society that deals with money. So you needed a hetariska. What were you going to do? How are people going to lend and borrow and do business without some way of getting around the question of interest? So our rabbis established for the well-being of Klal Yisrael a heteriska. This is completely rabbinical in nature. Well, mechiras chametz. I mean, there's so much more. Our rabbis knew. So following the destruction of the Second Temple, Jews return back to Eretz Yisrael. They find that the relations between Jews and non-Jews had become too close, and there are problems of intermarriage and assimilation, so therefore they prohibited wine touched by a non-Jew. This is completely rabbinical in nature. This is not Torah Shebaal Peh that was given at Sinai. Torah Shebaal Peh that was given at Sinai, together with Torah Shebaal Peh, is that which explains, elaborates, and illuminates Torah Shebichtav, and without it we wouldn't understand the word of Torah Shebichtav, which was obviously given to the Jewish people. And as Rav Shamshon Frohl Hirsch says, there was the shiur that was given by Moshe, and then there were the notes, and Torah are the notes. We'll give you one more minute. Go ahead.
What about the idea of sacrifices when we have a new base of English?
I'm not going to go into that.
But that thought, what is that? Isn't that
current? As far as the Rambam is concerned, the Rambam says that when Mashiach will come, he will build the Beis Hamikdash, and there will be sacrifices as there were before. And we will have to go through a period of... Why negate?
You said that instead of having sacrifices, we are reading, we're praying.
Only in the absence. Yeah, that's what Avraham Avinu said. Hot enough, that's okay, this man should Bet HaMikdash came, but if there's no Bet HaMikdash, so what are we going to do? So God said, okay, when there is no Bet HaMikdash, let them read it and say it, and I accept it as though it were. All right. Just to bring home this point, I have on the sheets in front of you, those who have, and I already apologized once, for those who don't have, you can look in. On the left hand of this, there's the Mishnah Aleph. Bolo Kohen Gadol Likros, one of the things that the Kohen Gadol did on Yom Kippur was he read the Torah too. Everything had to be done by the Kohen Gadol. There was a reading of the Torah, and he read the parasha in Torah. Im rotzo likros b'big day boots, korei v'im lav, korei b'itzlos lav mishalow. He could use his linen garments. You see, he changed his garments 5 times on Yom Kippur. Anything that had to be done outside of the Holy of Holies, he wore the normal garments, the 8 garments of a Kohen Gadol, all year. Anything that had to be done within the Holy of Holies, he had special garments from Kippur that were only white, because anything with the color gold, anything with gold on it, cannot come into the Holy of Holies, because gold is a reminder of the Egel HaZahav. Golden calf can't come into the Bet HaMikdash. Every time he changed clothing, he had to go to the mikveh, wash his hands and his feet before the change and after the change. If he changes his clothes 5 times, that means that he goes to the mikveh 5 times, and he also washes his hands and his leg and his feet 2 times, before putting on the new clothing and after putting on the new clothing. And by the way, all of this is described in the Avodah of Yom Kippur. So when he reads from the Torah, there he has a choice. He can wear the linen garments that he's been using on Yom Kippur, or he can use a cloak of white of his own. Not the gold, but it doesn't have to be necessarily the Yom Kippur clothing. Chazan HaKnesset, no tail, Sefer Torah, no Lerosh HaKnesset. The Chazan HaKnesset gives it to the president. The Rosh HaKnesset, in other words, they move the Sefer Torah around as they take it out. They move the Sefer Torah around. And the Rosh HaKnesset, the president, gives it to the vice president. And the Skan gives it to the Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol Omeid, Umikabel, he stands and he receives the Kore Omeid, and he reads while standing, and he reads Acharei Mos. Parashat Acharei Mos and Sefer Vayikra, which is the description of the Avodah of the Bet HaMikdash, and then he reads Ach Be'osar. Ach Be'osar is the Parashat that tells us of the in Parashat Emor, later on in Vayikra, again the sacrifice of Kippur. The goal of Sefer Torah, he rolls up the Sefer Torah, Uminich et B'chayt Cheko, and he leaves it in his lap for Omer, and he makes the following announcement to everybody who's gathered in the Bet HaMikdash. Yoter mima shekarati lifneichem katuvka. Even more than what I've said to you is written here. And the Rav understands this as meaning 2 things. There's another parasha in Torah that deals with Yom Kippur. And it also means there's a great deal more that's written on the parchment of the Jewish soul. There's the Torah Sheba'al Peh that elaborates it all. There's a great deal more. And the Kohen Gadol on the day which represents the affirmation of Torah, Sheba'al Peh, is the one who says there's a great deal more here than is written. Because whatever is written here, there's a great deal that's written in our neshamas that elaborates and explains this. The next Mishnah on this page, I put it off a little bit, on the side. It looks a little bit like out of place. That was all done intentionally, so you should know that that's the next mission, in addition to the fact that I have difficulty getting it straight. Okay. In the middle of that Mishnah, Omer Rabbi Akiva, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines into that Mishnah, these are the last few words of the Mishnah of Masechet Yoma, Yom Kippur. Famous, who doesn't know it? Oh, Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva said, Ashreichem Yisrael, fortunate are you Israel. Lifnei mi atem mitaharim, before whom are you purified? Mi mitahar etchem, who is the one that purifies you? Avichem shabashamayim, your Father in heaven. Sheneemar, v'zorakti aleichem mayim tahorim utahartem, I will sprinkle upon you the waters of purity, and you will be cured. V'omer, and it says, mikve Yisrael Hashem, God is the mikveh of the Jewish people. And the fact is that the pasuk over there means mikveh from Lashon Tikvah. God is the hope of the Jewish people. But Rabbi Akiva learned it as mikveh, as we know mikveh. Ma mikveh mitaras atmeim, just like the mikveh purifies those who are impure. Ah, Af HaKadosh Baruch Hu mitaras Yisrael, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one who cleanses the Jewish people. The Rav learned this mission in a very special way. Rabbi Akiva was always the great optimist. There's the famous Gemara at the end of Masechta Yuma, where the rabbis are going up on Har HaTzofim. I was at a wedding last night on Har HaTzofim, and the rabbi who spoke under the chuppah described Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim on Har HaTzofim, and from Har HaTzofim you can see the Har HaBayit, overlooking the Har HaBayit. I get every time I go to a wedding in Beit Horot, you understand, I just stand out there and I look and I get shivers up and down my spine. So it says that the rabbis, they saw a fox coming out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and they began to cry and he began to laugh. So they asked him, why are you laughing? So he says, since the prophet had said that there will be foxes coming out, so I can be certain, just as the prophecy of destruction has been fulfilled, so too God is going to fulfill to the letter all of the prophecies of the reconstruction of the Beit HaMikdash. But the Rav added one idea to this Mishnah here. The Chachamim was standing on the Yom Kippur following the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. They were standing on Har HaTzofim. For hundreds of years, the great day was Yom Kippur. Who knows how many hundreds of thousands of Jews would come to the Har HaBayit to watch the Kohen Gadol. And now comes Yom Kippur. There is no Bayit. It's all in ruins. So they wanted to know. They were crying. So Rabbi Akiva turns to them and he says, Ashreikam Yisrael. Here at the moment of terrible depression, who is the one who encourages them and says, you're fortunate, O Israel. Before whom? Who is the source of your purification? The Rabbeinu Shalom. The Rabbeinu Shalom is still here. We don't have the Beis HaMikdash, and we don't have the Karbonos, and we don't have the Kohen Gadol, but the source of purification comes through God Himself. It was a little bit surprising for me, but the Avoda, there's a Nusach Sfarad and a Nusach Ashkenaz. The one that I have over here, Seder Avoda, Ato Kananta Olam Erosh, this is Nusach Sfarad. And the Rav, who certainly davened Ashkenaz, says that the Nusach Sfarad is the more, I better watch my words now, more authorized, more authentic, or because what's fascinating about Ato Kananta, and then the description of the Avoda, it's written in the language of the Mishnah. In other words, the same idea, the Rav is extending the same idea, that the reading of the Avoda is a reading of Torah Shebaal Peh. Not only that, there are opinions that the Avoda Ato Konanta was originally written by one of the Kohanim Gedolim, a Kohen Gadol in the time of the second Beit HaMikdash. And it was written in Mishnaic terminology in order that it should be this affirmation of the Torah Shebaal Peh. Now, I can keep talking about the Avoda, and we won't go into the Avoda. There are really three parts to the Avoda. Maybe four. So at least you'll have an idea. Atta Konanta is really a poem that precedes the beginning of the Avoda. I'll just take you through a few lines of it. But these are the introduction. This is the prologue to the Avoda. The Avoda is going to start toward the end of the page over here. We'll begin a description of everything that was done. Then, of course, is going to come that great piece, Mare Kohen. Oy, what the... Mare Kohen. How magnificent was the countenance of the Kohen Gadol when he came out. It's not only that, we sing it in a way that there's such joy. I don't know, but you know, it's interesting. Everybody wakes up. For Mare Kohen, people who are schlepping through, all of a sudden, Mare Kohen, everybody's singing, and it's terribly, terribly important they sing. They describe in such beautiful terms the magnificence of the countenance of the Kohen Gadol when he came out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. It was beauty, unmatched and unparalleled beauty. But then all of a sudden, a dramatic change is going to take place. We are transported, in a sense, during the course of the Avodah, if you're saying it properly. You can even imagine that you're in the Beis HaMikdash, and we just now hear the Kohen Gadol saying the ineffable name of God, the Tetragrammaton. We hear the Yud Kei Vav Kei. We're all prostrating ourselves, saying Baruch Shem Kavod Malchus Olam. You get the feeling that you're there. You get the feeling of watching the Kohen Gadol coming out. There's a joy that overwhelms you. And all of a sudden, you realize that you're living in illusion. This once was. It's not now anymore. All of a sudden, you realize, oy vey, we don't have all of this anymore. Right after Mare Kohen, it says, and you don't have this on your sheet, kol ele b'hiyot ha-heichol al-yisodotav, all of this great description, everything we've said now for pages, all of this was when the Beit HaMikdash was on its foundations, u'migdash ha-kodesh al-mechonotav, and the holy place was where it was built, the Kohen Gadol omedu mishoresh, and the Kohen Gadol stands and serves, doro ro v'samchu, his generation saw, they were full of joy. Ashrei ayin ra'ata kol ela. Fortunate and happy is the eye that saw all of this. But halo le mishma ozen dav nafshenu. When we hear this, we are full of sadness. Because now we don't have it anymore. And then we go for pages. We don't have this and we don't have that and we don't have the next thing. No kabonas, no ishim, no mincha, no zvachim, no shlamim, nothing. All gone. And all of a sudden, from the mood of great joy, do you know where we move into? The mode of Avelus. The mode of Avelus. We become mourners. On Yom Kippur, we become mourners. Yom Kippur, in the middle of the Avodah, becomes Tisha B'Av. And what's going to make it precisely Tisha B'Av, and maybe even more than Tisha B'Av, is the idea that the Asura Harugei Malchus, the 10 martyrs, we say not only on Tisha B'Av, but we say it on Yom Kippur. That's going to be on the other side of your sheet. We have the Asura Harugei Malchus. Eile Ezkerot, these I remember, the Nafshei Alai Eshbecha, and my heart, my soul pours out. And we're going to go into a reading of the Asura Harugei Malchus that is more powerful and more painful even than the one that we say on Tisha B'Av. In a sense, the reason, the psychological reason for this is, of course, there's a big difference between going from ecstatic joy all of a sudden the dramatic and painful change to Avelis. Tisha B'Av, so you have 3 weeks during which you build up to it. You start with the Shavuos of Tammuz, you come to Rosh Chodesh Av, you have a 9 peg. By the time you say Tisha B'Av in the morning, by the time you say the Asara Haruge Malchus, you're ready for the 10 martyrs. But over here, the structure of the Musaf Shmon Esrei of Yom Kippur is to take you into, transport you into another world. The Rav describes how he was able to see on the face of his father and his Zayder that when they said the Avoda, they were in the Beis HaMikdash. They were on Har HaBayit. They experienced and felt every moment of the great joy. And then all of a sudden, it's all shattered in one moment of time. The dramatic change from joy to Avelis. But Avelis on Yantif, it's a Yantif. Why is there Avelis? So here I finally came to the video at the point where the Rav says, on Yom Kippur, I don't know, how many Al-Chaits do we say? 42? We say all the Al-Chaits, Al-Chaits, Yechotonu Lefanecha, Ashamnu, Bagadnu, not only we sinned, our parents sinned. We confess all of our sins except one. In all of the long list of sins, there's only one that's missing. And that one that's missing is, the Gemara says, anyone in whose time the Beit HaMikdash was not rebuilt, it is as though it was destroyed in his time. And if we don't have the Beit HaMikdash, then we are at fault. And if we are at fault, Oshanu Bagdad.
The shattering reality, that it's not so. Everything that I've been saying now, and everything that I've been feeling once was, but is not anymore. Now let's take a look at read a little bit of the Avoda. Interestingly enough, the Avoda is introduced with Ochila Lokel. Ochila Lokel, don't give this tape to anybody. This isn't something about it. You know what this really is? Before the Avoda, since God says that I will accept your words, Unishalma Parim Slatenu, you will pay the sacrifices that you're going to make them up. The Shalma really is you'll make it up. You'll make up the sacrifices when you live. So that means that now when we're going to read the Avoda, it is like we are doing the sacrifices in the Beit HaMikdash. If we're doing the sacrifice in the Beit HaMikdash, but now we're doing it in what way? We're doing it verbally. So that the Avoda is like Tfilah. Al-Shlosha Devarim Ha'olam Omei, the world stands on 3 things, Torah, Avoda. Avoda once meant the sacrifice in the Beit HaMikdash, and then it became Tfilah. Ochila Lokeil. I will pray to God by Achale Panav. I will pray before His face. Eshalom Imanu. I'm going to ask from Him, Man Eloshel, that He should give me the means to express myself. Asher B'Kahal Om, that in the presence of the people, Ashido Uzor, I will sing of His strength. Abi Arunanos, I will express song. Da'ad Mifalav, for all of the great things He did. La'odam Mar Chelei, Ume Hashem Man Eloshel. To be able to express oneself is a gift. Men can think and feel. But may Hashem, from God comes the gift of man eloshon to express oneself in words. Hashem svasai tiftachu fi agit tehilotach. Does this sound like we are at the beginning of a Shmona Esrei? Is this the beginning? God, open up my lips. Ufi yagid tehilotach. Open up my lips. Unishalma parim svatenu. We are going to use our lips now as the form of service. Ye will also may feel that the words of my mouth be accepted by you, the head only be the thoughts of my heart, Lefonecha, Hashem Tzuvi V'Goyalim. I started saying that in the Avoda there is the introduction. The introduction is the Ata Panata. Now I'm not telling anybody if you daven Ashkenaz, wherever you daven, I mean, go be my guest. If you think that's Avoda, well, you can do whatever you want. That's the new. But this is the Ata Panata, is the start. And it begins with the Ata Konanta is really the story of Jewish history until the construction of the Beit HaMikdash, Ata Konamta Olam Meirosh. You established a world from the very beginning. Your Sadat HaTevel. You put in the foundations of the universe. Vahakol Parota. You made everything. Ubriyobo and the creatures that are in this world. Your Tzarka. You formed them. Bishurcha Olam. When you looked at a world that was Tohu Vavohu, you took a look at a world with the starting of Bereshis. You took a look at a world that was void and empty. The Choshech al Pnei Tehom, there was darkness upon the earth. Geirashta Ofel, you cast out the darkness. V'itzav Tanoga, and you set the shine, the brilliance of light. God creates light. Vayomer Elokim, God said, Yihyeh. Golam tavnitcha min ha'adama yatzarta. The form, your form. He's referring to man. Min ha'adama, from the earth yatzarta. You formed him. Val eitz hadat oto pakadata. You commanded him not to eat from the tree of knowledge. Devorecho zanach, he rejected your word. V'niznach me eden. So he was rejected from the Garden of Eden. Velochilito, but you didn't destroy him. You didn't kill him. Leman erech apayim, because you are long suffering. God is merciful. Isn't that going to be the message of Yom Kippur? The infinite mercy of God. Higdalto pirio, you made his fruit great. Many children come from Adam. Upeirachto zaro, you blessed his seed. V'ifritam betuvcha, and with your goodness you made them fruitful. V'hoshavtam sheket, and you established them in peace. But by yifikuol, they cast off your yoke. V'yom lulokel, and they said to God, surely men, get away from us. So v'hasirot ha'yad karega, for a moment you removed your hand from them. Kechotzer umlolu, they were destroyed like the grass. In other words, as long as God is with man and with the world continues. He removes himself. When Hester Ponim, concealment of God's face, is destruction. Zachar Tobrit, by the way, what we were describing there was the Mabul, the flood. But then Zachar Tobrit, you remember the covenant with Tomim Bidoro, the one who was complete in his
generation. Bila Tatnor.
Noach Ish Tzadik.
Tomim
Bidoro.
You remember the covenant that you made
with the Tatnor. Ubisikuto Santo Maolam Shaded, and in his merit you left a remnant for the world.
Because of him,
a covenant was here.
Rainbow.
And with the
Lord.
Of his sacrifice,
But then,
they did it again. Total boss. They made a mistake when they had
Rainbow. And they built
a tower of heaven. By God, they look enough. Pioculus.
Master.
To the heavens,
looking
back to where you travel. By the way,
there is one
of them. Where you have a
exact clearly
stated
what is not
stated in Torah.
But
no, you must have a clue about God. That's how it only tells us
that they wanted to build
a tower in heaven.
And
all of the questions, I can say, what was that saying? And what was
it? So they made
like a big tower. I was
told
that the person who's tower was in a stump.
Upon the
effect of death. And then you're fed
all.
The one who wants to be a father of many people, all of a sudden, like a star, he comes
blazing.
Well, I say that I'm the world because I'm part of the cloud areas. The cloud. What happened to
you? Should
be a favor. What name? In memory, what name? I must wish I had her. I was her from him. I let her go. We can't see her. The pure. 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 The pure.
And here he's going to describe Yitzchak. And who comes from Yitzchak? May Gizo from his root. Ishtam. Who is the Ishtam? Yaakov. Ishtam. Hotseka. You brought him out. Chotun bividitcham meilechem lukach. There must be a medrash that says that Yaakov was born. No, not cesarean. Mahol. Chotun bividitcham meilechem lukach. He was taken out of the womb. Natakalo shnei asar shvatim. You gave him the 12 tribes. Ahuvei elyon. Loved by the one above. He's going to take us down. He's going to take us down. I'm coming to a close. Just so that you should be aware. In other words, this is going to be the introduction that's going to bring us until we come through the 12 children to Levi. Once we're at Levi, we have Aaron. We have Kohen Gadol. We have Kohen Gadol. Then we go into the description of the Avodah as it took place in the Beit HaMikdash. Magnificent. And then, of course, everything changes, and we turn over to the other side, and there we have the Asara Harugei Malchus, where the day of Yom Kippur turns from Simcha to Evel. And who were the Asara Harugei Malchus? The Asara Harugei Malchus were the giants of the Masorah of Torah Shabbat Peh. So that Yom Kippur, in that sense, is the day on which Torah is given, which Torah? The Torah that's inscribed upon the hearts and the minds of Klal Yisrael. All that I wanted to do is that you should be aware of the significance of the Avodah, but it's terribly important to read the words, maybe even read it in advance in translation to know it. It is so beautiful and so moving, and you got to wake up, you got to pinch yourself, and maybe have a little snot, or some smelling salts, to be able to go through the Avodah and say it the way it should be said.
And what if you're davening Ashkenazi, what is my master is, and I don't have the
You don't have the whole thing there. Do whatever you do in your master.